Welcome to Sestercast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean McDonald, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Kathy Campbell. Hey, Kathy, how's it going?
Hi, Jean. It's going great. I'm so excited. We're back for season two.
Season two. Me too. I've been missing Orphan Black, and I know we had to take a hiatus, but now I'm ready to just watch and watch some more.
Yes.
And before we get started with this week's episode, so season two, episode one, which is called Nature Under Constraints and Vexed, which is a lovely title, apparently from a book by Francis Bacon. They decided to change from the Darwin titles of season one.
Oh, interesting.
And well, I don't pretend to be that well read in philosophy to know exactly why, but maybe it'll make sense. But one of the things I wanted to ask you, and I also thought our listeners would be very interested in, is how do we recruit new viewers to Orphan Black? In other words, what do we say to people when they say, as has happened to me frequently, and just yesterday, in fact, a friend says, "What is Orphan Black? And why would I want to watch it?" And I'm like, okay, now don't screw this up. Say the right thing so that she wants to watch it, but don't spoil anything. And I think what I realized is I still don't like telling people about the clones if they don't already know about them, because it's such a cool surprise.
It's such a good reveal, like a surprise, especially because it doesn't even happen in the first episode.
I know.
And so it's a really big spoiler that's important for people to not know it's coming.
Yeah.
And even though I was spoiled.
I know, by me.
I will forgive you. Still forgive you.
Maybe that's why I don't want to tell anybody else, because I realized, right? Like, oh, damn, I spoiled it for Kathy and I didn't even realize it because I assumed that you knew.
Yes.
If you do read some of the stuff online, like, you know, for sure, I thought it was interesting actually on the IMDb page for this series, the user reviews are very much marked like spoilers, so people don't mention the clones. However, if you just, you know, glance down at trivia, right away they say something about the clones.
Right.
And so if you went to that page, you'd probably figure it out. And certainly as well on the about page at BBC America, they say they're clones. So it's not like the producers of the show are trying to keep it a secret.
Right. Well, yeah, it's not a super duper secret. Not like, you know, the end of The Sixth Sense.
I was going to say Sixth Sense is the one that definitely it's more than a spoiler.
Yeah, for sure. And so thankfully it does come up fairly recently or fairly soon in the series. So that helps a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've been telling people that it's kind of like Alias meets like a science fiction type show. And then I just kind of be like, just watch the first three episodes. And then if you don't like it, you don't have to watch anymore. And everyone's watched the first three episodes and continue to watch. So yeah, it's hard to describe though.
It is.
Because it covers such a wide range of ideas and themes and styles.
Yeah. One of the things that I start out saying, especially if my person I'm talking to is female, this is the best ensemble of female actors, and what a range. It's not just some young cute teenager, you know, it's women in all sorts of walks of life and ages, you know, throughout the series. So if you need that, like, that fun, you know, pick me up power up feeling of watching cool women kick butt, Orphan Black will help you with that.
Yeah, no, that's a really good, it definitely passes the test.
Yeah.
I can never pronounce it correctly. The Bechdel test?
Oh, the Bechdel test.
That one.
Yes. It definitely passes the Bechdel test, which for those who don't know, is a very, very low bar for
so low
for female representation in popular culture. So if a show has one dialogue with two women talking about something besides men, it passes the Bechdel test.
So. And yet with such a low bar, it's very surprising how few like shows and movies actually pass it. That says a lot.
Yeah, that's the horrifying thing. Yeah. So, yes, I think pretty much every episode of Orphan Black must pass the Bechdel test almost by definition. But like, for example, there's only one season of Star Trek Voyager that passes it 100% every episode. And that has a woman captain and a woman engineer, you know. So,
right.
So what is going on in pop culture? But that's another podcast. I'll put a link to the Bechdel test and into the show notes. But yes, and actually the other thing, I think you're right, because I certainly said to you, you need to watch three episodes to see if you like the show. But I have also said to people, if you watch the first 2.5 minutes and you can stop watching, then it's not the show for you.
Yeah. For someone that definitely doesn't have as much time or is not showing that they are that interested, then yeah, that would be a better way to put it.
Yeah. And I think that's how it was put to me by my friends, Allison and Steve, when I was at their house, where they said, well, I mean, they kind of spoiled it, I think. No, maybe not. They spoiled the end of the first 2 minutes, but that was okay. Cause we were only watching it for 2 minutes and that's how I was like, oh, okay. You know, that's the rest is history. That I watched one episode at their house and then I never stopped. So anyway, to get to episode one of season two, which is just so good to be in season two, although the last episode of season one was definitely running right into this episode. So it's not like we're starting fresh with a new location or some new characters or new plot line. We're continuing what happened.
It definitely, I know we said for the season finale, I mentioned that the finale of season one was such a good finale because it wrapped things up while still leaving some cliffhangers. And the same with this season premiere of season two, it really has a good solid, it's not pandering to anybody. It's like, look, you already know the story. If you don't, we gave you enough at the beginning of the episode to like hop in to remember where we're at. So let's just get to the information. And yeah, and they do. They they really jump in with both feet, shall we say.
Yeah, well, in their tradition of stunning openings before the credits, this episode one definitely has a lot of meat to bite into when you go like, whoa. And also I thought very beautifully shot. And I was thinking about you with the interiors as well. So I hope we can talk about that a little bit. But basically at the end of last season, Sarah discovers that Kira and Mrs. S are no longer at home. And she immediately assumes they've been kidnapped by Dyad. And she starts running. So this episode opens with her running in the rain and making lots of phone calls on her cell phone and not being able to reach anybody. And she ends up going into a coffee shop to sort of pull her stuff together.
And not only not being able to reach anybody, but all of her sestras, their phones are disconnected.
Right. That's right.
So like she has to leave a voicemail for Felix and Paul. Mm-hmm. And everyone else is disconnected completely. So, of course, she's like, this is not good. And it points more to the fact that the Dyad Institute are the ones that stole them. Because why else would they leave her phone working and everyone else is disconnected if they weren't trying to get her to contact them, basically?
Right. Yeah. And so she goes into this coffee shop, which I love this set and I love the scene, and it almost plays out like a short little, you know, movie of its own, you know, what happens there, because they have this character, the guy, you know, the line cook who's behind the counter of the coffee shop, and it's like coffee shops, brightly lit, but not too bright.
Yeah. It's a perfect little diner.
Yes. It's a diner is really what it's more like. And Sarah comes in and he says, yeah, you look like you could use a coffee. And she says, thanks, but I'll have tea. Because, of course, she's British. So they have her drinking tea. And he brings her the tea and he just says, oh, the first one's on the house. And I'm feeling like, oh, good. She has somebody taking care of her. He seems nice, right. You know. And then all hell breaks loose when two more guys walk into the coffee shop.
I call them the two creepy dudes because everything about them just screams creeps.
Yeah.
Like, you just know something's up. And they're talking about eggs. The asking eggs. If they're free range. Like, it was such a random conversation.
Yeah. Well, tall creepy dude. That's how I'm referring to them, tall and short creepy dude.
Perfect.
As, you know, finds out they don't have free-range eggs, he goes, your chickens have been interfered with. I think that's got to be one of my favorite lines ever that's ever been written.
It's such a dig to Sarah because they obviously know that she's a clone.
Yes.
And so it's just, it's so funny.
Yes. It's just not a discussion about eggs, which the coffee shop or diner guy doesn't know because he just says, not my chickens, just my eggs. they sit down with Sarah and start hassling her. And that's when things go sideways.
So Sarah tries to pull out the gun. Creepy dude is like, and takes the gun. But then the diner dude totally like pulls out a shotgun and is just like, no, you're going to leave the lady alone.
Mm-hmm.
And just is like, oh, hey. I think she's going to want to come with us. No, she's not.
Tall creepy dude drops the gun. Short creepy dude shoots diner guy while he's still looking at Sarah. It's one of those fake out like.
Yes.
Diner guy collapses. You know, he's going to be dead, but he manages to get one shot off and shoot tall creepy dude.
Yes.
So now we're just down to short creepy dude and Sarah. And of course, Sarah bolts. And before, you know, we get to that, short creepy dude says, like, I think you're going to want to come with us because we have Kira.
Right.
So what? Who is this guy now? Who doesn't have Kira? So
right.
And she bolts out the back of the coffee shop with the guy chasing her. I love this scene. It felt very superhero-like in a way of like, well, I don't have superpowers, but I can figure out a way to bust through this wall.
Right.
And
I bet she was never more thankful for a rotten, moldy bathroom.
Yeah.
She was able to knock out the really gross wall with the fire extinguisher, which, why was the fire extinguisher in the bathroom? Like, that seems like a very odd place to store it. I would think of the kitchen, but, you know, it works out. It's good for Sarah.
That's true. Yeah, I don't think they actually read up on code for restaurant establishments and safety, right. You know, but we needed that fire extinguisher. And it's true, fire extinguishers are, you know, very powerful potential weapons because they are big and heavy, but they're easy to hold on to. So
yeah.
For future reference, fire extinguisher doesn't always have to be in the kitchen.
Not when scripted.
So then we get the opening credits. Now we find Sarah in this huge, noisy gay bar. And
yeah.
Getting back to our other favorite character, who we haven't seen in a while, Felix.
Love it.
And she pulls him up out of some deep booth where he's sitting with a bunch of guys. He's like, why aren't you answering your phone? And he's like, well, I was in the middle of a five-way.
Felix. Yeah, Felix was definitely having a very good night.
Yes. And
is extremely high as well.
Yes, he's high and he is wearing assless chaps.
Yes.
And we get to see that ass with the no chaps on the back.
Multiple times.
So I think we had seen Felix in that state of clothing before, I believe. At least he has a very nice ass.
Yes.
Here we are talking about butts again, just like season right. one, episode one.
Always. You know, true to form.
Yeah, it's a theme. It's a story arc. It's just, you know.
Yes.
It's not the main story arc, but it is a tale of butts.
Yes.
Yeah, so he looks at her and, you know, I mean, she pulls him over to the bar and tells him what's going on. And he, because he's high, he's still not quite getting it. And he says, hey, why haven't they disconnected your phone? They were probably using it to track you, which seems like Sarah would have figured that out.
I think she was a little bit emotional.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. And she needed to talk to people. And all her numbers are saved in that phone. She doesn't know them by heart.
Right.
Like everybody.
Yeah. She figures out Paul's. Well, okay. So she calls Paul and is like, we need to meet. Mm-hmm. And then steals. So throws the pink one in a glass of water so it's mm-hmm. done, and steals another phone mm-hmm. so that they can then plan the plan to get Kira back,
which includes sending Felix on a an errand to Allison's house
while still high
and
still wearing the assless chaps.
Well, he didn't have time to change.
No, of course not.
And he's like, I'm here, I need to get a gun. And Allison, it's really fun to be back in the Allison craft lair again, because yes. Felix is fiddling with some of her ribbon, you know, pulling it out as he's talking about this, and he's nervous. And I thought, that ribbon is going to get wound right back up while we're watching.
Yeah. And she goes back and she winds it, but she doesn't wind it perfectly, which no. I thought was really amusing. She's just like, I got to get it out so it's at least off the ground.
And she's like, I'm, you know, I'm trying to turn over a new leaf. I'm not drinking, I'm not taking the mother's little helpers, and I'm doing a musical. And I think so, my favorite Felix line of this episode is, oh god, not cats.
Yes. And, and I love that it's later pretty much quoted by Art as well. I hope it's not cats. I mean, I just love their rage for cats, just makes me happy.
Yeah.
And so Allison doesn't want to give her any of, doesn't want to give Felix any of her guns because they're all registered to her. But she's like, I have a friend. Let's mm-hmm. call him Ramon to get an unregistered firearm. So
right.
Allison and Felix are going to hook up with Ramon to get a gun.
It sounds like the title of like a movie. Allison, Ramon, and Felix yeah. get a gun. Anyway, so that was fun to be back in there. And there was a quick cameo by Donnie, who wakes up and says, what are you doing in there? And she's like, I'm running lines for the play at 4 a.m. Right. She's, I'm not in control of the muse. And that's a great Allison line.
Yes. And especially because Donnie is just like, I want nothing to do with this. So yeah, okay, that sounds perfect. You do that.
You do that. There's a nice scene of Sarah calling Paul, telling Paul to meet her on this bridge. He goes to the bridge. Of course, somebody else, some skateboarder, I guess, comes and hands him a phone and asks, or, you know, demands $20 to get the phone. And so Sarah, you know, set this up pretty cleverly so that Dyad can't track her. And then she's talking to Paul, who says, like, Rachel's taking Kira out tonight on a private plane. There's a Dyad event, you know. And meanwhile, they show Rachel's henchman. He's just henchman. You know, the ideal henchman, Daniel Rosen is his character's yes. name. I call him Cylon number 5. He looks so Cylon-y in this show, especially. Maybe he always does. But he's trying to find Sarah. He thinks he's found her, but it's a girl, another girl in a hoodie. And she skateboards off and says, hey, Sarah, she says, up yours. By the way,
it was such a Sarah thing to do.
Yeah, Sarah needs to like get away because they definitely could track her down. I suppose they figure it out after she'd been talking to Paul. But she hops on a city bus and borrows a kid's phone, who says, "Can I touch your boob?" And she's like, "Cheeky."
Yeah,
it's like no.
So funny.
I know. She talks to Felix and Cosima about the Dyad event and just says, I'll feel better when I get a gun.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, Allison's meeting up with Ramon.
Ramon, who sounds like he should be, you know, this big adult, like
scary,
scary dude. And oh no, it's a wimpy little teenager who works at like a fake Walmart. And it's just, oh, it's so perfect.
It's a gem of a scene. Yeah. The dialogue is great and it doesn't last very long, but he's, you know, he's showing her, he says, you want these drugs? No. Oh, maybe you're going natural. Shows her some pot. No. She says, I need a piece.
And of course he pulls it back and here's a variety of gun options. And she chooses the lady grip.
Yeah.
And Ramon approves of the choice. And so it's like, okay, perfect. So she's going to take it to rehearsal tonight so that Sarah can pick it up.
Right.
Which they discuss later.
Yeah. And then she says, and how's your mother?
Yeah. I know, because it's Allison. Of course, she's going to be polite. She's not going to be. And of course, she knows everybody in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So, yeah, of course she'd ask about his mom.
Yeah, maybe we skip to the community theater rehearsal.
Yeah.
Because it's so awesome.
It's so great.
And I'm going to let you take the lead since you are a thespian.
A theater.
A thespian yourself.
Yes. So they're at rehearsal and apparently it's 4 days till they go on. And this is also when we learn that Ainsley was in the show, which as you may remember, Ainsley is now dead. Allison watched her die. I don't think she murdered her necessarily so much as just was not an active participant in possibly saving her.
Yeah.
So they're discussing having to recast Ainsley's part, of course, because Ainsley is no longer alive. And so the director tells one of the girls, you're now playing, is it Laura or Lori? I didn't write it down.
I think it was Laura.
Laura. Mm-hmm. You're now playing Laura. And Allison's like, excuse me, I'm your Laura. And the director comes over and is like, you practice with Ainsley. You know this. You are now whatever. You are the lead. And Allison's face just, you could tell, like, this was a bonus of having participated in Ainsley's death.
Yes. An unexpected upside.
Benefit. Yeah. So they start their fantastic performance of whatever this show is.
I did look into it this time because I was curious, like, is this like a famous show? It's not. But it is an actual show that they licensed to use in Orphan Black. It's called Blood Ties. It's a Canadian musical, but it did tour and it was in the Edinburgh, drama festival. And the thing is that they were initially going to use Grease, which would have been really interesting, you know, because I guess Allison would have gotten promoted to be Sandy, but they couldn't afford it. So the licensing, and they were now like, should we just write some like little, you know, bit of a musical because we can't afford Grease? And one of their people on their team had also worked with Blood Ties and with the writers of Blood Ties, and she suggested it. And so, and then when you watch it, it's like, oh my God, this goes like very well with Allison's situation.
Yes, no, it's perfect because the scene that they're doing is they're cleaning up after an accidental murder or something. And I'm just like, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
It's so perfect for the show. It's so perfect. And so while they're performing, Art comes in and sees Allison on stage and then goes out to Angie in the car and is just like, all right, she's here. And they're sitting there and they're talking. And all of a sudden they see Sarah, who's coming to pick up the gun. And of course, Angie being Angie is like, aha, we're going to take her down.
Yeah.
Like roughs her up, throws her against the car to cuff her. And it's just being Angie, just as Allison is coming out with the gun. And she's just like, oh no, I can't. And Sarah's just like, please, you know, go back inside. But the problem is that Sarah doesn't have the gun yet. Allison has the gun. Sarah needs the gun and it just all, you could tell shenanigans will ensue.
Shenanigans.
But both Art and Angie are trying to get some sort of information from her because, of course, Angie's pissed. And Art wants to know what Sarah was going to tell her before the lawyer came in. Mm-hmm. Sarah manages to have them take her to the diner because she knew, obviously, what happened. And this was a different precinct or different people were cleaning up the diner.
The scene.
Yes, cleaning up the scene. And so they go and they hear the story, which is pretty much exactly what Sarah said happened, and except the feds are there. Or, quote unquote, the feds. Yeah. Because I'm guessing that they're not actually a federal agency. Probably someone else, the Prolethians, to clean up their own scene or something.
Daniel Rosen, he was the lawyer, the one right. who came to pick Sarah up. So nobody wants to argue with a face like that.
Yeah, no, you definitely don't. Don't mess with that. But either way, they're there. Sarah can't tell Art what happened. So Angie goes in to try and talk to the other cops, and Art and Sarah are left in the car, and Sarah convinces Art to let her go and that she can't tell Art what happened and Art can't tell Angie. And so obviously Sarah's scared.
Yeah.
With good reason. As I was watching this, I was like, oh, Art, it's so close. Art's going to get to know. Art's going to know what's going on. Come on. Let him in the loop. He can help, type of a thing.
So, I mean, on the dyad side, and Cosima, Delphine is with Cosima and she's drawing blood. And Cosima says, this blood better not go to dyad. I do my own research. I check things out first. At the end of the final episode of last season, we've discovered that Cosima has the same respiratory issue that
the German
Katja Obinger. Yes. And so Delphine is worried about this, of course, because she loves Cosima and like everybody, you know, she works for Dyad. So she's going in right. to Dyad for this big event that they keep talking about. And Leaky wants to see her right away and says, like, why isn't Cosima here? You know, and she says, well, you know, she's considering the job. She's right where you want her to be, but she's afraid of us. But she will, you know, she will come on. And then she gives him the blood sample.
Right. And tells like, her really? and tells Leaky that she has the same thing that two other people had.
Yeah.
That they're all sick and whatnot. And I was just like, I knew it. That
Delphine, that little French slippery eel. But
yes,
I don't know. So she does say to him, which I thought was interesting. She says, congratulations. I'm invested, which is, I'm sure, is what you wanted, which is true, that Delphine won't leave Dyad as long as Cosima needs to be cured.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Which I'm sure is why Delphine handed it over. So because Dr. Leaky would be the one that could fix it, that could heal Cosima.
So, so now we're getting down to the, the final scenes here. Sarah and Felix and Cosima are in Felix's apartment talking about how are we going to get that gun when the door that someone knocks on the door and he says it's Ramon, and Felix has already heard the name Ramon, so he opens it and there's Ramon, cute little high school kid with a delivery. He says delivery for Mrs. Hendricks, and has like a flower a box of a flower arrangement.
Yeah.
And Felix is like, he says, that's so Allison. And he said, and Ramon says, it's what's on the inside that counts. Don't you agree? And sort of gives Felix a little flirtatious.
A big wink, wink.
And then he gets a glimpse of Cosima and Sarah and he goes like, whoa.
Yeah.
And that was the end of that. you know, bye, Ramon. We're done with you now.
Yeah. He's served his purpose.
Meanwhile, you know, what Sarah wants to do is go to the dyad and bring the gun and make Rachel give her Kira. Like, you know, very unsubtle plan.
Very Sarah plan.
Sarah plan. Not a, you know, Kasima says, I'll go and I'll just make them give Kira back. And everybody, like, you know, wants to laugh hysterically, like, oh yeah, Kasima, you would be really good at that.
Right.
So while they're trying to figure out what to do, because, you know, because there's, if she wants to get to Rachel, there's always that Daniel Rosen, Cylon number 5, at her side. And he's pretty, seems to be pretty invincible. So I love Sarah just says, like, I have a plan, but Allison is not going to like it.
Not
going to
like it.
Because Allison had just told her.
I'm like, oh, great.
Allison had just told her that she had to go out to do rehearsals with Sarah Stubbs, her friend from community theater.
Yes, the new Laura, I'm guessing.
The new Laura, right. So now Rachel can call Dyad. Paul answers
Sarah.
And gives the phone. Thank
Sarah
you.
Can call
Sarah
Paul.
Can call.
Yes.
Dyad, thank you. See, another clone, another confusing moment on Orphan Black.
Yes.
And Sarah gives Daniel the, says, yeah, I'll meet you at Sarah Stubbs' house. I'll be in the red minivan.
Which is perfect.
And at first I was like, really? In the minivan? You know, the first time I saw it, and I'm like, oh, right.
Yeah. As soon as she said red minivan, I was like, oh, this is brilliant. Good job, Sarah. Way to get Daniel not just out of the picture, but really far away because she's in the suburbs. So
right.
That's like far enough away from the city where she can do whatever she needs to do to get to Rachel without the super henchmen there. Like watching her back, and yeah, it was so smart. And I loved the scene where they come out, all the guys come to tackle Allison, and she's blowing the whistle, and she's spraying mace, and she's scratching and kicking, and just like, yeah, get him, Allison, get him.
Yeah. No, that was hysterical.
But of course, Daniel knows that that's not Sarah.
Yeah.
He's not an idiot. He can tell. And so lets Allison loose. And you could just know, you know, that the next time Allison sees Sarah, she's probably going to slap her, even if it's not on screen.
Yeah. Yes, and she would be justified. But hey,
yes,
nothing succeeds like unrehearsed rage.
Yes.
And the mace especially, so...
That was so funny. Oh, it was, and the rape whistle. I mean, just, yeah. Oh, it was brilliant. It was so good. So it's now time for the dyad party.
The dyad party. It actually opens. There's Dr. Leakey. I just wanted to point out Dr. Leakey is shaking hands with somebody and getting someone's taking a photograph. And those two guys are John Fawcett and Graham Mason, the creators of Orphan Black.
Oh, how fun.
I think that's the only cameo they've had in the show. And they're very recognizable guys. Like, you know, so anyway, if you didn't catch that, and why would you if you haven't watched it 25 times like me, it's worth going back just to see a little glimpse of them on the show itself.
No, I'm totally going to watch that. I love when creators get involved in the shows that they do in little cameos like that. It just makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you see what you think is Cosima coming into Dyad, but we know already that it's Sarah, right?
Yeah, well, I was pretty sure it was going to be Sarah, but I knew that there was a chance that it could be Cosima was going to distract people and Sarah would do whatever. But then she moves down the glasses and says, shite, and you're right. Like, oh, that's Sarah.
Yeah, she can't use the glasses and... So she manages to snag Dr. Leakey's pass, his electronic pass for getting around in the building. And and she goes down to Rachel's office, waits until, you know, the coast is clear, and then confronts her. So and Rachel says that, no, we actually don't have Kira, right? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They just wanted all they wanted was her here, but they don't have Kira or Siobhan. They don't have her. And so, of course, Sarah doesn't believe her and is pissed, which is not a good combination. Mm-mm. And Rachel's like, you're not going to shoot me. And she shoots right over the shoulder. And that porcelain, like, reigning bitch that Rachel normally has completely disappears. That mask is gone because she is scared in a way that she's probably never been before. Mm-hmm. And just another amazing piece of acting by Tatiana, like, to have, just brilliant, brilliant scene. And so she's, like, Sarah's trying really hard to, I can't tell if Sarah's trying hard not to shoot her or trying to shoot her because she's torn because it's her face.
Yeah.
But she also, there's still the chance that she could be lying, that Kira isn't, that they don't have Kira. Like, it's hard to say. And then Paul shows up.
Well, and, you know, I wanted to say, like, that point. So Sarah's, you know, made a shot, but then she tackles Rachel and she's above her, like with the gun at her cheek, the barrel of a gun at her cheek. And they're face to face that way, you know. And I thought this is one of those awesome clone scenes because you know that there is one person.
Right.
But two people are acting with each other in a way that's just incredible. So
yeah, it's amazing.
Again, hats off to Tatiana Maslany, but also to Catherine Alexandri, who was her acting partner.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And so Paul is just like, okay, you need to get off of her, playing the consummate big bad bodyguard. Mm-hmm. And so Sarah knocks Rachel out, partially because I'm sure it felt good, but also so that she couldn't witness what Paul's going to do. There's definitely some threats. Paul is aiming the gun at Sarah. Sarah's aiming the gun at Paul. But eventually Sarah punches Paul in the face and is like, oh, in the face. Nice. And lets her go.
Yeah.
And she goes straight to Art's house.
Right.
Which at first was a little odd that she went there instead of to someone else. But she also is just like, someone else has Kira. Who else to help? If it's not at the Dyad Institute, it's got to be, I mean, Art's the only one that will know other law enforcement type contacts to try and see what's going on.
And I mean, it is season two now, episode one, and we need Art to be in the loop. Just as an audience, you know, we don't want him strung along forever.
No. And Sarah sees Maggie Chen's file is at Art's house. Mm-hmm. And so she tells Art that someone else took Kira. And Art is talking about how the diner ended up being domestic terrorism with the it was a extremist religious group, the Prolethians, which is the same people that Maggie Chen was involved with. And that's how we learn that they took Kira. Mm-hmm. And before we get to the last scene, which made me want to cry, we see Helena. Well, first you hear the music because Helena's song is very, very distinctive.
Yeah.
You know that Helena's going to show up. And I was happy that because I like her as much as she's a crazy person. I like her character.
Yeah.
And so she makes it. But I'm very confused as to how far she was able to get into the hospital before someone noticed this limping, bleeding person. I mean, she made it really far, really far.
I mean, she walked herself all the way to the registration desk.
Yeah.
And then she could say the immortal words, my sister shot me.
Excuse me, my sister shot me. And then she passes out. And you see creepy dude number two from the diner standing there in the hallway. And he's got his hands on his belt buckle like a Texan. And it's got the fish. the fish from the ring.
Yes.
So we know it's a Prolethean. The Prolethean fish.
The Prolethean fish. Yeah. So you knew that guy was going to show up again.
Oh, yeah. He was still alive. He was going to be there.
So, and then there's that final scene, which you said made you cry or almost made you cry.
Yeah. It was heartbreaking. So there's Kira sitting on the ground and this person's brushing her hair really roughly and then puts her on the bed and then takes a picture of her. And I don't know if they're doing it to prove life or if they're going to do some sort of terrible like seller on the black market as a child of a clone or I don't even know. And it's heartbreaking because poor Kira. And where is Mrs. S? Another fear.
I know. Well, hopefully these things will be resolved in episode 2 of season 2.
Yes.
Coming up very soon on SestraCast. Are you excited we're watching another season of Orphan Black?
I am so excited to not only be able to watch it, but to be able to talk about it with you and all of our listeners.
Me too. Well, let's wrap up the show then.
Thank you so much to listening. Wow. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of SestraCast. You can find us online. We are on Twitter at SestraCast or individually. Jean is at MacGenie and I am at Mrs. Soup. Join us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/SestraCast. We'd love to chat and meet with you. And of course, you can find all of season one's episodes on theincomparable.com. Thank you so much for listening and have a fantastic day.
Yeah, bye-bye.